Blog Talk Radio.
All right, what's up, everybody? You're tuned into This is Ayanna Jones on the GoPro Radio Network. Wow. Happy, happy Wednesday. It snowed, then it rained, then it sleeted, then it hailed. I tell you, if people think that, you know, global warming is not here already, let alone coming, they got another thing coming. Anyway, we're broadcasting live tonight on the GoPro Radio Network. www.goproradio.com is the website that you can go to tune in to all the great shows that we have here on the network. Of course, you're tuned into This is Ayanna Jones. Is you listening? I hope you are. And as always, tonight's show is sponsored by BW Moving Images, home of some of the best storytellers on earth. And that statement could not be more true for 2013, because we have some fantastic film projects that are in the works this year. Not only the documentaries, Disappearing Voices, The Decline of Black Radio, which still continues to generate so much interest 2 years after being released. We're now working on a new documentary, Diary of the Dragon, The Revolution of Fred Hoke, which is due out in the spring. Very excited about that. And, of course, super excited about the feature film projects that we're going to be working on. And I want to give some shout-outs to a couple of folks before we get into the interview today. Jared Burnett, who interned with us many moons ago, actually stopped by the other day. He's a he's a filmmaker in his own right now, directing and editing. And so it was really great to see him, and he's going to be working with us on some projects. Of course, Tylon Eusebio Washington, director of the projects here that we have at BW Moving Images, including directing Disappearing Voices, Diary of the Dragon, also the feature films that are going to be coming out this year. So we have a really great team of people that I'm excited to work with. I want to give a shout-out to my online engineers, Shauna Glover, of course, Tatiana Washington, Tyana Washington. And I want to give a really hearty shout-out to Nina, who's in the house with us today. She's been helping out and just been a really great and positive spirit. We've met so many wonderful people, and it's not even the end of January. I mean, I think the stars are all aligned. They say the number 13 is the number of transition, and I think we're going to see some really positive transitions for this whole company here and for the network in 2013. Speaking of filmmaking, just a little bit later in the program, we're going to be talking with my very, very special guest. She's joined me on a number of occasions before. Not only is she a filmmaker, but also, and I should say independent filmmaker. And I don't mean just, you know, independent in terms of not being connected into the matrix, but I think independent in terms of using her platforms to change the world and to change perspectives, you know, that people have in the world. You know, it's one of the most important things that you can do when you have, you know, when you have that kind of platform. I think she's dedicated to that, and she's done that. And of course, I'm talking about Stacey Muhammad, who's a filmmaker and an activist. Now, let me just go down the list and tell you some of the things that, you know, Stacey's done. If you don't know, she's directed several documentaries, and she's now releasing a web series. And we're also going to be joined today by Robbie Morgan, who stars in Redemption for Colored Boys, which started out as a film and, from what I understand, is now being launched as a web series, which is very, very exciting. And, you know, I'm just really happy to have her here on the show, because we get to have, in addition to the artistic conversations, also the political conversations, because I think it's important to talk about art and creativity in the context of the political landscape in which it's made. So without any further ado, I want to bring onto This is Ayanna Jones, Stacey Muhammad, and also Robbie Morgan.
I'm muted.
Hello, you're on the air. Robbie? Stacey?
Yeah.
There seems to be...
Hello.
There's like a delay. There's like a delay.
Y'all both sound exactly alike.
Well, you know what? We are going to see if we can't fix this. Technical.
Hello.
Today, guess what? On Saturdays, we have a great lineup for you. The New Radio Generation, which has moved to a new time. It's now at 6 o'clock. So you want to make sure you check that out. Don't miss it. It moved from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. And, of course, that means the first show of the day on Saturdays is the Glenn Z Show. Glenn's always bringing you his usual rants about what's going on with the government, the conspiracies, the various ones from media to secret societies, and, of course, our very own government. So you don't want to miss the Glenn Z Show at 4 o'clock. And then the thrill ride that is like never ending at 7 p.m., the Sexy Party Show with Mr. Lucario and also Miles Cunningham, airs on at 7 o'clock on Saturdays. And that show is always really, really, really great fun. And this weekend, I think they're going to be joined by the Big Hair Girls. They're celebrities in their own right in the Jersey City, actually in the tri-state area. Some really fun girls that are going to get on the Sexy Party Show and challenge some of these ideas that these guys have been talking about as far as women and dating and relationships. And that's really new territory for the GoPro Radio Network. So that's a lot of fun. But we're going to play a clip. While we try to get Stacy and Robbie back on the line, we'll play a short clip for you guys of Redemption for Colored Boys. This is Season 1, Episode 1. And check it out. Let me know what you think.
Going out without a fight. Grew up hard, seemed like it became harder. Opened my eyes on the day that I lost my father. I pray that my kids never have to see the struggle. When I pray my little sister never have to go and hustle. Days was hard, nights was a little rougher. Started getting older, had to get a little tougher. Me and my mom fighting, I just wish that I could hug her. I wish that I could tell her that I love her, but I can't. Had to go and be a man. Wasn't thinking about a curfew, I was thinking about a plan. I'm trying to get out, I ain't doing it for the fame or the...
I ain't gonna lie, that shit was tight, dog.
He only heard 10 seconds of this shit.
But I'm saying, though, shit was crazy.
All right, if you say so.
Yo, I'm on this. Out of bounds.
Thanks a lot, though. I appreciate it, John.
No fucking issue.
All right, man.
You on that damn floor?
You and this music.
Well, I'm trying to hit the club tonight.
You hit the club? You serious? Can't even get out the house.
Whatever, man. Mercedes. Wow, so good
nice
to see you.
Me too.
Oh, man.
Listening to just a few seconds of Redemption for Colored Boys, Season 1, Episode 1. And let me go back to that screen because I want to let folks know some information about this production. It is an independent one, as I mentioned earlier, and they're in the process of raising funds to continue to make the series. They can't do it without your help. They're in the process of creating their fundraising campaign so that they can raise funds for the Redemption for Colored Boys web series. And, you know, they want you to consider supporting their efforts. After viewing the first episode, which you can look at by going to StacyMuhammad.com, and you like what you see, and I don't understand why you wouldn't, and you'd want to see more, hit the donate button that's on the page. You know, it's a worthwhile project. I think Stacy Muhammad is a phenomenal filmmaker. I know Robbie Morgan is a wonderful actor, and it's a worthwhile project. It tells a story, and it's not the same dribble that you're used to seeing on mainstream television, and even on some of the alternative television that seeks to kind of tell the stories of the African diaspora, and most of the time without their input. So I urge you all to support that, StacyMuhammad.com, and donate to Redemption for Colored Boys, Season 1, Episode 1. This is the independent art, the cutting-edge art that you want to see more of, that you complain about. You can do your part to help to bring it into existence. So let's see if we can get them on the line one more time. Hopefully we're joined right now by Stacy Muhammad and Robbie Morgan. Are you on the air?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, guys, we worked it out. How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. So
everything's groovy. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic now that you guys are on the line. Let's get right to it and talk to us, Stacey, about this new project, why it exists, why you made it, why it's important, and what folks can expect from it.
Well, the new project is called Redemption for Colored Boys, as you mentioned earlier. It's it actually started off, believe it or not, as a documentary series where I was looking at different areas in which I believe that black women are targeted in America. I'd never done a narrative film before. It was kind of like my first time venturing into that outside of film school. So I decided to look at those areas and script some stories around those particular areas. So the first story is about a brother named Benjamin Boyd Sr., who upon release from prison is taken to come home and reunite his family and reassume his role as father to his 7-year-old son and 15-year-old daughter. So we did the film festival circuit with it. We may actually do some more film festival with it, but now we're releasing it as a web series, and we've released the first episode, and, you know, the feedback has been incredible thus far, so we're definitely excited about that.
Yeah, well, it's certainly a buzz going around on the Internet and, you know, on Facebook. I definitely follow your work, and folks are talking about it and actually anticipating it quite highly. What's the difference been in terms of the process working on a documentary versus working on a feature project?
Well, this is short, but it's a short narrative film and now web series. When we actually shoot the series, it really will be like shooting a feature film because we'll shoot the entire series at once. But you know, film is definitely a collaborative process. You know, you definitely have to trust people with your vision. It's a humbling and a gratifying experience to have people come on board. I mean, incredible actors like Robbie and Alito, McCullum, and an entire crew of people who believe in your vision and give their time, energy, and talent to see it come through. So it's been a humbling experience. It definitely has given me quite a bit of, I think the energy and the and just everything that I needed to move forward with this project and all the other projects that we have coming up that will be narrative as well.
Right. And how did you go about casting for the series? I mean, did you have folks in mind that you wanted to work with, or did you were people sort of attracted to the project? How did that work? How'd you end up with Mr. Morgan?
It's funny because I think a lot of work. You know, I call him like the hardest working black man in independent film because he does a lot of really good quality work. So when we initially started shooting for Color Boys as a documentary web series, Robbie was on board at that time. So he has really been with me every step of the way from inception with this project. In terms of Alito McCullum, the brother from The Wire who plays E in the film, I had a friend who knew him and came on board. And yeah, pretty much had everyone in mind in terms of who I wanted to cast. So that's going to move forward into the production. We will be doing that and we have some sort of still series.
Right. And so why Redemption for Colored Boys? Because I suspect, but, you know, I'm just going to guess just for my listeners that, I mean, I don't want to say it was a direct response to, but I think it had something to do with the release of For Colored Girls. Certainly that project has, you know, gotten a lot of heat for various reasons. But and I think of most of the things that you see on mainstream television, and, you know, you feel like if you're a filmmaker or any kind of creative person, you want to answer in some way. So I'm just wondering if this was a sort of answer to that, even if not to that specifically, but just to some of the things that are out on television now, or, you know, in the film arena.
Right. Well, I mean, it's definitely an answer and a response to this single story. I think that we see about black men in media and in mainstream media, which I think is a very dangerous, stereotypical type of single story. You know, For Colored Boys, you know, kind of just looks at the lives of 7 different men in different situations. A brother isn't coming home from prison and right back on the door, doing whatever he may have been doing that got him incarcerated. These are just real life stories, you know, human stories, not spectacle, you know, nothing that's really exaggerated, nothing extremely stereotypical. But definitely just really human stories. I think I said the last time I was on a radio program, I mean, looking at ways to humanize the population of people who I think have been the most dehumanized in media, which in my humble estimation is Black men. So hopefully, For Color Boys will begin to dispel some of those myths and give people an alternative to the story that we have.
Well, I definitely think it's, you know, a great description of the project. You know, regular people, human people, they do come in all shapes, colors, and sizes. But for some reason, you know, I think you're absolutely right with your analysis that, you know, Black men in specifically, you know, are erased, you know, from having any sort of story or any sort of dynamics. You know, range of emotion and experience and intellect and talent. And it's just really interesting because, you know, the last time we actually saw some gritty filmmaking, I would say, you know, at least in terms of television, that didn't necessarily tell the stories in that way, but kind of showed a grittiness with The Wire. And it was unfortunate because even within that scope, you still had specific set in range of people of color, you know. They were, you know, either good guys or they were bad guys. I mean, even with the complexity of the character, still the presentation was pretty much rote, right? It's like this cliched thing. Like, if we do tell a story about complex characters, it's still going to be set in an arena that involves drugs and cops, jail, and, you know. So I think this would be, you know, something really interesting and educational for people to take a look at, you know, and see that, you know, when people get out of jail, you know, it's not simply an issue of recidivism. It's also an issue of, you know, these people have families that are waiting for them to come home. They're waiting to come home to their families. They want to do something different. How does that kind of person navigate, you know, them changing the way they see the world? You know, you go into jail one way and you come out another. How do you think the film or the series is going to be received? And what are your hopes? Like, what do you want to do with this series beyond, you know, having it online? I mean, what are your ultimate goals for the series?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, they say more people watch television on the web than they do actually, you know, on television now. You know, there aren't a lot of dramatic web series that feature Black characters, so I think that, you know, For Color Boys would definitely be one of the few web series out there. And there are some really, really, really great quality web series out right now, most of which are comedic, though. And, you know, we just want to see what happens with it. I mean, our goal, like I said, is just to get it out. So far, the response has been overwhelmingly positive. I mean, you know, people kind of wild out on YouTube in the comments section. I mean, everything that we've heard thus far has been extremely positive. You know, so like I said, I mean, I think it's just really to tell these stories. Unfortunately, you have to say things like, you know, we love, we eat, we cook dinner, we take long walks. I mean, we just do regular human things, and unfortunately in mainstream media, we don't see that enough. So hopefully, you know, we'll flood the Internet with as much as we can of these human stories about Black men.
I certainly hope so, and I think that now with a series like this, we can actually address the question of seeing ourselves on television. Because, you know, when we first got on television way back in the day, we, even though we saw ourselves, we certainly didn't see ourselves. You know what I mean? And I think this is a unique opportunity for us to actually see us as reflected by ourselves, as opposed to somebody else interpreting what we think, feel, and want. Listen, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to hear more from Mr. Morgan. I know folks are waiting to hear about the acting experience and what that's like and what it's like being on set. So don't go anywhere. You're tuned into This is Ayanna Jones on the GoPro Radio Network. I'm here on air with Stacey Muhammad and Robbie Morgan, and we will be right back. Tune into the GoPro Radio Network for an exciting lineup of shows. On Wednesdays at 6 p.m., it's the Eco-Socialist Horizons Hour with Joel Cavell, Ben Barson, and S.P. Whelan, your only source for connecting the dots between militarism, imperialism, climate change, and ecological crisis. Then at 7 p.m., it's the BCS Experience with Byron C. Saunders, history, art, culture, and politics in review and discussion. Then at 8 p.m., it's the Kay Thompson Show, giving you a closer look at the business, art, and politics of New Jersey. And last but not least, this is Ayanna Jones at 9 p.m. discussing all things creative, political, and creatively political, only on the GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. www.goproradio.com. All right. All right, and we're back. You're tuned in to This is Ayanna Jones on the GoPro Radio Network. For those who want to join the conversation, you can call in at 713-955-0528. That's 713-955-0528. And I am joined live tonight with Stacey Muhammad and Rob Morgan, and we're talking about redemption for colored boys. We're talking about the state of the film and television landscape as far as black filmmakers, actors, and directors are concerned. We're talking about a lot of things. Let's talk about Robbie Morgan for a second. Hey, Robbie.
Hey, Ayanna. How are you?
Now, for those who don't know, Rob is known best, well, not best, I won't say best, but he's well known for his role in Pariah, a film that got a lot of critical acclaim. And so now you're working with Stacey Muhammad. And if someone takes a look at your resume, it's obvious that, you know, not only is acting near and dear to your heart, but working on independent projects and you know, projects that have integrity, creative integrity at least, and something to offer the world are pretty much your forte. Would I be correct in assuming that?
Yes, ma'am. You sure would be.
Okay. So talk to me a little bit about what your experiences have been, particularly as a black actor, and some of the experiences that you've had working with folks like Stacey Muhammad.
Oh, wow. That's a 30-minute question in itself, but I'm going to condense it for you.
Well, we got 40 minutes.
Well, as a black actor, wow, I would have to say my experience is definitely something that's been unique to me, and I'm sure by the grace of God, I've learned to embrace and love the struggle which comes with acting. Then you compound that by like a well and an 18-wheeler truck and maybe like an Empire State Building, and then you will get a taste of what it is to be a black actor in a sense. And I say that because not only myself, but a lot of other high-level approach the game professionally, passionately, black actors, male and female, we don't get that many opportunities. And the opportunities that we do get, it seems that the industry believes that they would have to, like, resuscitate Morgan Freeman, who I have all due respect for, or they would have to, like, bring back somebody else. Like, they would just keep recycling the same face for 20, 30 years.
Right.
To make you believe that this is the only one that can represent this group of people, when we're, like, so diverse and so vast in our language and our talk and our attitude and where we come from and in our experiences. We oftentimes don't get to see that because of the lack of opportunities, which makes me excited about working in independent films such as the ones Stacey Muhammad and I have worked on, because it gives us an opportunity to, like, not be the stereotype. It gives us an opportunity to give a voice to somebody whose voice isn't represented in mainstream media. And if their voice is represented in mainstream media, it's not true to them.
Right.
It's a dream. It's a wish. It's a stereotype. It's a goal of mainstream media to put their voice out in a particular way. So with this particular project, I was excited about it because Stacey came to me in the beginning, and like she said, the black male voice is very, very limited, and if it is seen, it's kind of seen as a caricature. And then if it is seen in the true sense with some human dignity or some humanity, it's only seen for a short period of time, after 6 episodes.
Right.
You know, and then it goes away, and then it transforms from the corner to the wire. You
right.
know, they morph it in a way to make it more mainstream and hitting on their goal. But I love it. You know, like I say, you got to love it in order to endure it. And for me, it's one of those things because by the grace of God in New York City, I've probably been one of the most active actors for like the past 3 years, right?
Right.
I still can't get an audition, just to give you an idea. You know, it's hard for me to get an audition, even with a manager and an agent. I still have limited opportunities on auditioning. And your window of opportunity is only going to be so big. And for me to be, you know, at a high visible rate in the independent film market in New York City for 3 years, you know, you can kind of be like, wow, what is it then?
Sure.
What's the holdup? What's the ceiling? So if ceiling is there, if that ceiling is there, then, you know, the Stacey Muhammads exist. You know, the Jerry Lamothe exists.
Absolutely.
You know, the Karamu Kush exists. The D. Reeves exists, who is a director of Pariah also. So we go to those independent films so we can, you know, keep our instruments strong even.
Absolutely.
So go ahead.
But no, you know, and I think you're absolutely right. And one of the things that always gets me about this issue of opportunities or the lack thereof for black people, and we can extend this beyond entertainment, right? I mean, pretty much any.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Except
sports or comedy. We get the front seat unless it's ownership.
Well, that while you took the words right out of my mouth because I was going to say ultimately, just as actors are full people, they're not just performers. They have political, you know, ideas. They have ideas about society. They have families. They have ideas about the world. They're dynamic people. You know, the control of your destiny, I always feel it has to be the result of a dynamic hands-on approach. You know, it's great to be in front of the camera, you know, but to be a full person, you know, you have to be.
Ayana.
Yes.
Let me give you, because you're talking about, you know, chances and destiny. Let me give you a breakdown. My manager said, yo, Rob, you're like one of our top bookers. And I said, but you don't even send me on audition. So, look, she pulls up this file. She shows me since August 2009, she submitted submission. That means she's told cast directors, hey, check my man out, check my guy out. She submitted me 1,849 times.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those 1,849 times, I've only gotten 60, we will see him, 60 auditions, right? Out of those 60 auditions, I booked 14%. And to her, she was imagining that was like, because her highest client was, I booked 13%. Her highest client was 14%, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for me to get 13% out of 1,849 check my man's out, look at that's a crazy number to like really fathom and approaching a career as.
Right, like, and we need to call it what it is, because on this show, I mean, I'm all for having the high level conversations about things, and you know, the fundamental issue gets kind of like couched in terms of, you know, lack of opportunity, you know, you know, 14%, you know, I mean, it's racism. It's racism. And look, you know, we can't address it, you know, if we don't call it what it is. And I'm saying everybody knows it, but I think, you know, it's 2013. We live in a digital age. Technology is sort of taking over. And people are trying to find more sophisticated ways to talk about something that's existed for five centuries now. And is still very much alive and well, just in different and more subtle and insidious ways. And it needs to be addressed, you know, out front. I mean, it's horrible that somebody who's talented. See, this is the problem, too, with the entertainment industry. And you guys can weigh in on this, please. You know,
hey, Ayana, I'm going to tell you, oh, my God, I love that you're talking like this. Because, look, think about this. It is racism, definitely, flat out, and it's right there cut and dry. We got to look at how this industry started. It started without us in mind, first of all, from the first start. So it's probably going to want to end without us in mind, secondly. Third, anytime you could take Hollywood's golden boy, its billion-dollar creator, George Lucas, and he wants to do a film with nothing but black people in it, and they still tell that billion-dollar golden boy no, what does that tell you? That, if anything, from that whole debacle of the Red Tail thing, we should have got that as the sign first. That should have been the first sign, the biggest sign of that whole production. Think about that.
Right.
I mean, Ayanna, you know, for me, I think, like, as a, you know, Marlon Wayans came out with a clip recently, and he said, and I'm not verbatim, but he said something to the extent of there's no work for black actors. You know, if you want to be a black actor, you have to be a black writer, you have to be a black director. You pretty much have to create your own work.
Right.
And if it's on Facebook, if it's on Twitter, if it's on a radio show, I mean, the quote that I reference all of the time is in the Sulla quote when he says, if you don't understand racism as white supremacy, what it is and how it operates, everything else you think you understand will only confuse you. So within the artist community, you know, there's this sense that we can't have these really honest conversations about the structure, the environment that we're in, and the way in which that racist, white supremacist, capitalist, patriarchal society affects every aspect of our lives, including art. So this is, you know, it's like black people have a tendency to forget that Hollywood is a system that supports race and white supremacy. Mainstream media, radio is a system, is a part of that system that, you know, informs and supports race and white supremacy.
Not GoPro radio. I'm just saying.
I'm sorry?
I'm saying not GoPro radio. That's one radio thing.
Right. And
yeah,
but then, right, and so you have to have, you know, these things that kind of branch off from that independent film, independent radio.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's really unfortunate. I mean, you're right. That, at the core, that's what we're dealing with. You know, and unfortunately.
Image control.
One thing I would say is because, you know, then you get to the second level of this conversation where folks will say, well, you know, you've got to create your own stuff, you know. People got to, you know, stop complaining. They got to get out there and they got to do it.
We got to support it.
Right, and I can thank you because I can attest to the fact that I've been out there for many, many years working on this from independent record labels to independent television shows. I hosted my own show called The Ghetto Chronicles. Now here at GoPro Radio, BW Moving Images stands for Black Wax. You know, we've been around a long time. It's a struggle getting people to support. Stacey Muhammad has been doing her thing for a long time. How come she's not exploding all over Facebook? So we have a twofold problem with this. It's like folks are already of the understanding that, okay, it's very difficult for us to get a break because we got the whole deck stacked against us. So do your own thing. Great, we have been. You know, it's not going to be promoted all over the media, or at least the mainstream media, but we have been doing our own thing. There's plenty of black people, black actors who need work, black writers who'd like to work on black films, black directors who'd like to work with other black camera people. I think that, you know, we've got to network better. And I'm not saying
that we have to embrace responsibility.
But that's part B of the question. You know what I mean? We have to put our money where our mouths are. You know, plain
and simple. We were recently having a conversation about Danny Glover, who has been trying to make his film about the Haitian Revolution now for God knows how many years.
Sure.
He has $18 million of a $30 million budget. When he presented the screenplay, he was told that it wouldn't be greenlit because there were no white heroes in the script. So you're right. This isn't about black people not having an imagination. It's not about black writers not writing the stories and having a desire to tell the stories. You know, it's that saying, if it's not in the mainstream, it's not in the bloodstream. So you have masses of people who really don't pay attention to independent media. So it's not a lack of imagination. It's not a lack of an attempt to tell these stories. It's just that mainstream media is a machine that's used in a particular way, and it has a certain narrative.
Right.
You know, so it's unfortunate when people say, well, just go make it. Well, first of all, it's not that easy. It's not that simple. You know, to just get the money, get it green, and get it cleared. So the films that generally are getting the money, the green light, and the theaters have a particular narrative, and that narrative really generally is not in support of black people being depicted as human.
Right. You're absolutely right. But I still say, you know what, we're going to go on a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about something else that I know has been a hot topic, and I think it's relevant here. It's a surprise, so I'll save it when we come back from the break. I think you already know what it is.
I don't want to talk about it.
You're tuned in to This is Ayanna Jones on the GoPro Radio. I'm live with Stacey Muhammad and Robbie Morgan, and we will be right back after this break. Tune into the GoPro Radio Network for an exciting lineup of shows. On Wednesdays at 6 p.m., it's the Eco-Socialist Horizons Hour with Joel Cavell, Ben Barson, and S.P. Reeland, your only source for connecting the dots between militarism, imperialism, climate change, and ecological crisis. Then at 7 p.m., it's the BCS Experience with Byron C. Saunders, history, art, culture, and politics in review and discussion. Then at 8 p.m., it's the Kay Thompson Show, giving you a closer look at the business, art, and politics of New Jersey. And last but not least, this is Ayanna Jones at 9 p.m., discussing all things creative, political, and creatively political, only on the GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. www.goproradio.com. All right, and we're back. You're tuned in to This is Ayanna Jones on the GoPro Radio Network. I'm talking with Stacey Muhammad and Robbie Morgan. We're talking all things film. We're talking film revolution. And, of course, we are going to jump into a topic that I know I almost don't want to talk about it just because I know folks have been talking about it, you know, and constantly talking about it. And I'm always a huge critic of, you know, conversations being framed by what comes out of mainstream media, you know. But I do think that Django is a relevant topic because
Django for president.
Because it has sparked so many different, you know, responses. And I understand what everybody's saying, you know, about this film and, you know, both sides of the spectrum. I have my own opinions, but I want to hear from you guys, like, what your impressions of the film were. Let's start with Stacey.
Oh, God.
Stacey, be a good
ladies first. Ladies first.
Be a
yeah,
good...
I mean, definitely been a hot topic. You know, when I saw the film, I posted, saw Django tonight, still pondering it, and I think I had about 300 replies on my thread. And I'm just, like, exhausted from the conversation. I was supposed to go to Philly, you know, sit on the panel about it and didn't make it. I mean, I had serious issues with the film. I had serious issues with our Holocaust being comedic in any way. You know, I think that people are thirsty for black love, which I think is part of the marketing of black people as degenerate, you know. There is no lack of black love. And if there is a lack of black love, then let's talk about why that is. But I'm not desperate for black love stories, so much so that I can't see that it's being wrapped up, that racism and white supremacy is being wrapped up in this narrative of black love. I mean, I could, you know, go, you know, break down why I had issues with the film. I really didn't want to do that. But I had serious, serious issues with the film. Yeah, I did.
You know, I follow a lot of your conversations on Facebook, you know, and we talk about stuff, and I know sometimes we're aiming at each other on certain things that, you know, like, and I try to be objective about it because I actually, there were a lot of things that I liked about the film.
Django for president.
Yeah, but I also, you know, I also like to hear what, you know, people, what issues people had with it because some of the issues that people had with it, like, first of all, this was the one that kind of really killed me, and I just can't stop talking about it because a legitimate issue, a like I said, a high level conversation, a debate about the substance of the film. Let's by all means have that conversation and agree on those things. But to sit up there and say, well, I hated the film because I counted how many times the N-word was said, and based on how many times it was said, that's how much of a problem that I had with it. Not to turn this into an N-word debate because, you know, I always get into it with people about that too. But what I will say is that, you know, sometimes when we're dealing with things from a political perspective, we have an issue with context. I mean, if you could say to me, well, you know, there's a lot of you know, a white supremacist patriarchy wrapped up in this whole thing. Okay, we can have a conversation about that. But if your analysis can't get past how many times somebody said the N-word, particularly about a film that was set in times when slavery was legal in this country. It just, you know, it boggles my mind because it means even if you have a problem with it, and even if I have a problem with it, we can't really have a substantive conversation about it if you can only manage to be offended by surface aesthetics. You understand what I'm saying? And to me, it reeks of the same issue that I have with the Obama lovers across the country. And I'm, you know, I don't know, like, can we analyze the political spectrum in a way that is not simply the same way we would, and you know, analyze who won on American Idol?
Absolutely.
Well, he said, and he's black, so we need to support him. And, you know, it's the same. So I'm spreading it out on Django and the specific issues with the film to say even the political debate about the film, it's very shallow. It's not, there's no real analysis. And I'm a little frustrated by that personally because I feel like go ahead.
I think it exposes something else. Like, I think that what's most disturbing than the film for me, I mean, people can feel how they feel about it. Like, I don't, you know, whatever. People can feel how they feel about it. But what's more disturbing, I think, is what has happened since the film. It, you know, it's kind of like the conversation about Spike Lee being a hater and the comments from Dick Gregory today and then the comments from Luther Campbell. You know, I mean, it's just gotten to the point where I'm just like, wow. I mean, divide and conquer is a hell of a thing where we're just going back and forth and back and forth about this particular issue when it's just like you don't see this type of conversation about any black film. I mean, for people to come out and say that Spike Lee didn't have a right to not support the film, I think it's just ridiculous and inflammatory, and it's hurtful. I mean, I wouldn't be a filmmaker if it weren't for the work that Spike Lee has done. You know, if it weren't for the path that he blazed. So for black people to come out now and say, oh, well, Spike's a hater, or, you know, Spike has fallen off, I mean, I think that what this has exposed in terms of this white savior syndrome that we have as black people is what's more disturbing for me than the film itself.
But do you really think it's this film that sparked that? I mean, this, let's take this whole culture of hater, you know. The new thing, hip-hop, you know, and I mean the cultural aspect of it, where now it's like...
Well, I found Django to be high art with a lot of beautiful subliminal messages. I don't know if you care what I thought of the film, but
I thought. Yeah, I actually agree with you. I mean, it's one of my favorite films of all time right now.
I found a lot of messages in that film to be pro-black in a way that a black filmmaker probably hasn't, since the 70s of our time, doesn't even have the nuts to put in that film.
Like Jerema
and Sankofa,
really?
Sankofa, I love Sankofa.
Right.
Look, I got Sankofa. I watch it at least once every 7-8 months. I love Sankofa. But that's Sankofa. And that was an indie film. We're talking about a major film where somebody put their money in it. And it got out there for the masses to see. But my point I'm going to make is that one of the biggest subliminal messages in that film, with a lot of brothers and sisters had a lot of backlash about and just didn't understand it, even though it was something that really happened during that time in America, was when that white man was over there about to cut Django's privates off, right? Cut his privates off, which they did because a lot of the hate that is directed towards black men is because of the rumors and the sexual endowment, the prowess and all that stuff. But when he was about to cut his nuts off, and he didn't, when he walked away like a homosexual. And when I bring that up when I'm having these conversations, people don't even dawn on it. And that's because when we look at these pictures, we got to think of it like chess. It's not the move you're looking at. It's the move that you're going to make after the move you're looking at. And Quentin, in my opinion, with that movie Django, he played chess throughout that whole movie, exposing a lot of subliminal messages. With the time when the German guy talked about white guilt, even though he was responsible for a lot of slaves' freedom, a lot of subliminal messages. That's a lot of that white guilt is what permeates a lot of the actions and attitudes that we're talking about right now.
Well, can I interject too, because I agreed with you on that, and I was like celebrating in the theater when I saw the film, because
I was clapping and
well, and a lot of the audience was, and it's so funny because two rows back there were a couple of there was a white couple, and they were not clapping. I'm not saying they weren't clapping because they you know didn't like the film, and they were hoping that, you know, the slave owners would win. I didn't think they were racist, but I think they felt uncomfortable at how celebratory a lot of the audience was. And this is not to say now that we're going to try to be, you know, mind readers or fortune tellers and just assume that, you know, Quentin Tarantino, this person who nobody knows, is just this really benevolent guy that really wants to, you know, use his platform to expose the injustices and, you know, to outline the hypocrisy of, I don't know what his motives were. You know, I mean,
his motive is to make money. That's his motive.
And the film was produced by the Weinstein brothers. I seriously don't think that they are proponents of black liberation. Okay.
Not at all.
Making money.
But and also, you know, just to, maybe people don't know this, but it was produced also by Reggie Hudlin, who I think his heart's in the right place just based on his track record of things that he's produced. If there's something to be said for that, I think we can take away from it. You know, as Robbie said, the important messages, some of them subliminal, some of them not so much. You know, I mean, you know, I've spent my entire career battling the racism, battling the hypocrisy, making my own way, being very, very radical. So I'm not being pacified or lulled to sleep by Django. But at the same time, we've got to admit, you don't see, you know, black men winning. You know,
Garf going through hell and high water for the love of his black woman. Like, he will not do nothing until he saved this woman. He gets to walk away with her. He don't run away. He's not bleeding. He's not shot dead. He's not asking somebody to please let him go. He's walking away.
I can't see a character. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are two things that are extremely problematic for me. One, this conversation about, like, comparing this to what black filmmakers are and are not doing. First of all, that's a falsehood. So these comments like, you know, well, this is what Quentin Tarantino did, and black filmmakers don't need to nothing. Like, no, they have. Halle Jarima did Sankofa. People didn't support it. It took this man years to raise. Let me finish.
Let Stacey finish her point.
So I have an issue with this conversation about what black filmmakers need to do in comparison to Quentin Tarantino. That's the first thing. People can feel how they want to feel about the film, but I don't see a character who showed absolutely no humanity whatsoever toward any other slave, even in the end of the film when he had an opportunity to say to those brothers on that wagon, I apologize, I'm sorry, I had to play that part. Like, he showed no humanity whatsoever toward any of those slaves. So, I mean, the bottom line to me is this. People have very serious, passionate feelings about this film, either they're for it or against it. For me, what the conversations have exposed is what's more problematic. You know, this idea, this notion that black people can just go and make the film they want to make, you know, then just go make the film about a black hero. And then when you tell people, well, for instance, Danny Glover has been trying to make that film, we don't want to have a conversation about racism and white supremacy and why he's being told in Hollywood that they won't greenlight that film because it doesn't have a white hero. We keep going back to whether or not we like Django. Like, who cares? There's another conversation that needs to be had about why black people can't make those films in Hollywood. So to me, it's like there's something else that's being exposed here, and we keep banging over who likes Django. I don't care who likes Django. Why can't we have a conversation about why when a black filmmaker presents that script, he's told there are no white heroes, so we're not going to greenlight that film? To me, that's the more important conversation.
Well,
I don't care about Django.
Well, hold on, Robbie, because we're going back to the beginning, the very first statement that I made at the beginning of the film. The reason why, or this is my belief, my personal belief, but I think the reason why we're not having those kinds of conversations is because those people who are, say, and I mean, I'm not speaking personally for Danny Glover, who I admire very, very much and have worked with, but who I would just say that when you have a conversation about why you can't get a film greenlit and you don't talk about racism, okay, because you've got all these different connections in the industry where, yeah, you know what it is, but you're still trying to get your stuff done within the context of this racism, we're not going to be able to break out of that, you know, without having those conversations in that context. So when you say to someone, here's my script, and they say, well, it has to have a white hero, why aren't you all over the news about that? Why aren't people up in arms about that? I mean, I witnessed millions and millions of black people sending in petitions about the fact that the post office was going to discontinue the Malcolm X stamp, something which don't understand what that has to do with the liberation of people or the creating of pathways for success for people across this diaspora, across this country, across this world, really, black people, whether or not there's a Malcolm X stamp. But if Danny Glover had sent out a petition, you know, and I don't mean, okay, you should have sent out a petition and that's why you don't have the money, but I'm saying we have these conversations in secret when we're at that level. And I'm just trying to.
It's been all over the internet. I'm saying the conversations that people are having about what black filmmakers need to do, that conversation needs to cease. When you hear someone say Danny Glover presented this script to Hollywood and is not greenlit because there are no white heroes in it, then it's not a conversation anymore about what black filmmakers aren't doing.
Like I said, this industry started without you in mind. So if it started without you in mind, what makes you think it's going to put you in mind?
Exactly.
Now?
So you shouldn't tell black filmmakers what they need to do.
Can I make my point now? Can I make my point? All right. What I'm saying is that if it's already got a set up or a program without you in mind, why are you so pressed to get involved with it? Why does it have to be Hollywood to greenlight your script? It doesn't take no more than $50,000, $100,000 to put a good idea. We did what you saw, Ayanna. We did for Color Boy for $5,000.
But can I tell you something?
$5,000. It doesn't take much money.
You're both right, and let me tell you why. You're both right, and I'm going to tell you why.
Don't go to Hollywood.
No, I'm going to tell you. No, you should go to Hollywood. You should go to Hollywood. There's two parts to that answer.
You're going
to
keep getting the short end of the stick.
It doesn't matter. You have to expose that. Okay, that's the first thing. You don't just silently let somebody gatekeep you. Okay, and if that's happening, and if it's happening behind closed doors, or however it's happening, where it's not getting out into the mainstream, and people don't know what's happening, that's a problem. You do still have to make your own stuff, and I don't think you. And that, maybe that's my issue. I mean, you know, I don't know that.
That's why those millions of.
I don't know that a movie.
Those petitions for that Malcolm X stamp.
Wait, I don't.
Because if he said, if you got a problem, don't wait for nobody else to fix your problem. Fix your own problem.
Right.
That's why we sent in those letters for that Malcolm X stamp.
But I don't know that
they would have a Martin Luther King stamp, which he would go and ask Hollywood to greenlight his script every time. They slap him, turn away, come back, ask him how to greenlight my script.
But they need to be confronted on that. However,
they don't have to be.
Hold on a second. Let me finish
yeah,
my
they don't
thought.
Need to be.
You can comment on it. Let me finish my thought. I don't think there's budgets and then there's budgets. If you want to get something, I've worked with Melvin Van Peebles. Now, we talk about the pioneers who trailblazed and created a pathway, not just for filmmakers, but specifically for independent guerrilla filmmakers to do their thing, meaning you don't need the unions. You don't need Hollywood. I'm going to show you how to take it to the street. That's the person that I came up under who taught me and also my colleague, Tylon Eusebio Washington, about making films. Melvin Van Peebles shot some of the scenes from his latest film in our studio. I never imagined we could turn an apartment into a mine shaft, but somehow we did it. That did not cost $15 million.
I'm so glad you brought up Melvin Van Peebles' name. I'm so glad you brought up his name and that you worked with him and he was a pioneer. Now, look at this. Just a year ago, I go into audition for NYC 22. For not even a guest star role, for more than probably like seven lines, right? You know who I'm sitting right next to? Melvin Van Peebles auditioning for the same role. And in my head, I thought, wow, how am I sitting in this room with a pioneer, with somebody who spearheaded black art, black cinema, who's auditioning for a damn guest star role. Now, would I F the room and sit next to Clint Eastwood to audition for a guest star role? Would I ever walk in a room and sit next to Anthony Hopkins? Would I ever walk in a room, sit next to the damn whoever in his caliber of age and audition for a guest star role at his age? Then that told me, where were the people that should have been supporting this brother?
Well, first of all,
why is he in here auditioning for a guest star role with his background? It's crazy.
Okay, well, Melvin, first of all, is a very good friend of mine, and I can guarantee you that while he might have been sitting in a room guest starring for a role in something or other, he is moving mountains on his own. The man is not relegated to that. Okay.
Let's not drop the point I'm making.
Let me finish my point, though, so that we can have a substantive conversation about the point I'm trying to make, which is you have to do everything. Okay. Stacey's right. You cannot ignore the fact that there's racism. This answer to why black films aren't being made can't be because black filmmakers aren't making black films. You know, they are systematically and categorically ignored. There's no question about that, and you know that from being in the industry. However, I don't necessarily think that it takes a certain amount of money to make a certain kind of film. One of the things that I learned from Melvin Van Peebles, and this is what he always said, is your budget dictates the film. You have the story. It's at the core of you. You have $500. You're going to tell that story for $500. You have $18 million. You tell that story for $18 million. The question then becomes, how important is it to get the story out? And, I mean, that's the question that I think that black filmmakers, black anything really, are facing when they're trying to do anything creative, you know? You have to be willing to do this. Is, and Arthur Ashe said this, Tylon Washington says this all the time, you start where you are, you use what you have, and you do what you can. But at the end of the day, it really has to be about what is it that you're trying to accomplish on the outset, okay? Are you trying to tell this story that you think is going to be important to the societal landscape across the world? Or are you trying to get $10 million more dollars so that you can have this thing blow up at this particular moment in the film? You know, we can't be limited by those who are trying to limit us. And I think that in that sense, yes, you must go out and you must make it. You know, but at the same time, you have to challenge this racism. It can't just stand, you know, because, you know, you find black people doing things, they get shut down. They're an infinite wellspring of creativity, so they go do something else. Here comes the machine to shut that down. Okay, so then they go over here and they try this. Here comes the machine to shut that down. At some point, the machine has to be confronted.
And a lot of times, the machine looks just like us because we got racism amongst our own group. You do Cosby Show, Spike say people don't live like that. You do Tyler Perry, people say, oh, I love that. But, you
well,
know,
one-
it's like...
We can't negate the responsibility to ourselves.
Once we see, we always have these talks, but we never always own up to the responsibility to ourselves as a group, as a collective group.
But if you release some tennis shoes
at midnight, you'll have a line around the block of people that look just like me. If you release for Color Boys online, you got to be on Facebook 3 days straight to get 3,000 views in 10 days, which we're very, very, very grateful for. But if we would have been Korean and dancing.
I'm sorry. I had to mute you just for a second because we have about 90 seconds to end this. And what I do definitely want to do is give another plug for people to support Redemption for Colored Boys. Go to www.stacymuhammad.com and donate money to this project. It needs money. You want to see more black voices out there. Then you have to put your money where your mouth is. You've been Jones on the GoPro Radio Network. Stacey, thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate everything that you had to say.
As always,
I support you. I'll be making a donation once I get off the air. Robbie, it's been you guys got to come back and be on the show because an hour is not enough to talk about all this stuff. But again, don't forget to tune in on Saturday to the GoPro Radio Network, New Radio Generation, the Glenn Z Show, the Sexy Party Show. GoPro Radio Network is doing it all the time. www.goproradio.com. independent radio, revolutionary radio, doing it like nobody else is doing it. You've been listening to This Is Ayanna Jones. Is you listening?